FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you are listening to Ecotopia, a weekly program exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. I'm Stephen Chudy.
I'm Susan Chudy. On tonight's program, we'll be talking about the concept of eco-socialism, which our guest, Joel Covell, argues is essential to saving the Earth. Capitalism, he says, just won't do it because the profit motive drives the capitalist system to exploitation of the Earth and its inhabitants.
We'll also be talking with Cheetah Chudy, puppeteer, about some puppet-making workshops he'll be conducting in conjunction with a new procession of the species that will be part of the Butte Environmental Council's Endangered Species Fair next May 7th.
Ecotopia is made possible in part by member contributions and by American Qi Center for Health, offering acupuncture and Chinese herbs to treat chronic and acute conditions such as headaches, allergies, asthma, and more. Acupuncturist Bill Nickel offers clinics and consultations by calling 342-2895. And we're also brought to you by Alternative Energy Systems, a locally owned and operated partnership providing energy for life with sustainable energy available on the web at www.solarenergyforlife.com. Alternative Energy Systems offers energy solutions for residential, commercial, and agricultural needs. They can be reached by calling 345-6980.
We want to remind you that the opinions voiced on Ecotopia do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. We'll take a short break and be back to talk with Joel Covell, author of The Eco-Socialist Manifesto. Ecotopia on KZFR, and tonight our guest is Joel Covell. He's editor of the journal Capitalism, Nature, Socialism, and that title pretty much sums up the focus of our discussion tonight. In 2001, he published The Eco-Socialist Manifesto, and in 2002, he published a book that revised in 2007 called The Enemy of Nature, The End of Capitalism, or The End of the World. Welcome, Joel Covell.
Hi, pleasure to see you. Nice to see you. Be with you.
Great.
Okay. You've had a long career, Joel. You're a medical doctor, psychologist. You've done psychiatry.
Well, I'm not a psychologist, but I was a psychiatrist.
Okay.
Psychoanalyst. Yeah.
You've done social and political activism. Could you give us a little of your biography? How did you take, what was the route that led you to eco-socialism?
Well, it would take a while, so I'll abridge it. I was always a good student and interested in a lot of things, but I never was quite content with everything. I mean, I did things well and then would move on to something else. So I started off in science and then I switched to medicine. And within medicine, I started off as a regular internist. But then I moved to being a psychiatrist because I was interested in the mind and studying and becoming, you know, involved with a lot of things, but then becoming very politically active. And then the political activism kind of shaped my professional work, and I got into some conflicts because I was kind of active on the left. And so I left the psychiatric and medical professions in the mid-'80s, and soon after I got a position at a small liberal arts college named Bard College.
Yes.
Right.
And I had that for 21 years, and that was over in 2009, and now I'm retired. But, you know, I've done a lot of things along the way, and it's been a good life.
The subtitle of your book, it is very blunt, The End of Capitalism or The End of the World. And you quote Rosa Luxemburg, who says we have a choice between barbarism or socialism.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of things. What do you see as how capitalism is doing this to us? And what would that barbarism look like?
I turn on the television. As you see it every day. You know, I say world, of course, I don't mean the planet Earth. I mean, you know, our world, the world we inhabit in the sense of, you know, like the whole world is watching or something. The world is, you know, our society, really, and our way of life. And I've given a lot of thought to this, and the capitalist system has very powerful and amazing achievements to its name, but it has some profound flaws. And most important of these is that it's a way of living and producing that, for the first time in history, entails the endless expansion of the cultural, of this economic product. And that's not my, you know, idea. That's what they say all the time. They talk about growth, newness, and new commodities.
Yeah, you have to grow. Grow or die.
Have to grow or die. Grow or die. Grow or die. Grow or die. And really, that is not the way of human society. And, of course, it's not the way of nature. And you're stuck on with a system which obliges you to constantly make more money, accumulate, as Marx would say, accumulate, and or, you know, go out of business of your failure. But you're also living on a finite planet that has very definite. I mean, your imagination is infinite, but the, you know, the physical world is there. There's no, you know, it's not something you can just fool around with like that. And then the terrible things we're going through just these very days, the nuclear catastrophe in Japan is a good example of that. I mean, it's an example of how a capitalist system is just heedless of natural rhythms or the ecological structures of things, and it constantly grows, and it has no equilibrium. I mean, equilibrium is a fiction within the capitalist system, but it's not the reality of the capitalist system, which is one of constant expansion and overturning all social relations and constantly looking for new commodities and new ways to transform nature. And what we're living in right now is a period in which, the bills are coming due. Right? We've created a very, very destabilized world, and it's a world in which our future is highly limited unless we figure out some way of going beyond the capitalist system. And this is obviously a vast and difficult job, but it's one that we have to undertake. Otherwise, the world will be over. And our civilization may be over, and we may become extinct as a species.
We'd hoped and speculated before we came on the air that you would talk about the Japanese nuclear problem.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe we could go back to your analysis.
Very much on my mind.
Sure. With good reason. You write about Bhopal in the beginning of the book, and you say, in effect, this was no accident. You can't dismiss Bhopal as an accident. It was a predictable consequence of the capitalist system. I wonder if you could explain that.
Waiting to happen, and you know, they're created in advance, and then you know, they seem random, but the precursors have been set into motion.
Right, but it was in this case, we've heard people say, "Well, who could have anticipated the tsunami as well as the earthquake?" I suspect you have a bigger view of the role of the nuclear energy industry in Japan.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the point is that the very use of nuclear energy or radioactive forces is such a violation of our position in nature. I mean, the life never would exist if the world was full of radioactivity. It took the Earth, planet Earth, billion years or so to sort of calm down before life could begin to evolve. And, you know, radioactivity is part of nature, but it's not part of ecosystems. It's not part of that way of nature where structures are built in equilibrium with each other, where they grow and expand, but always in a complex process of internal and external development. I mean, it's really kind of a violation of our destiny to move into this whole sphere of energy. Now, this is something that you know people have been saying for a long, long time. You know, but they can't get the ear of the officials and the military people and the great capitalist industrialists because. It's that Faustian bargain that you say, oh, my gosh, look at this energy. When the nuclear era began, they actually had this delusional idea that it would be too cheap to even meter, that we now had infinite energy at our command. And this is an ancient dream. I mean, this is kind of the thing that a lot of Greek legends or religious prohibitions have centered around it, because there's that quality in human beings of being unable to live within limits, to constantly break through and to constantly want more and more and more. And the capitalist system is the embodiment of that in a historical formation. And nuclear energy is the, it's this nightmare that we're living with. I mean, everybody who's study this in any kind of rational way knows that these plants are not sustainable because they produce more and more radioactivity all the time, and there's no way to really store to get rid of it. And it's just, again, like the Bhopal accident, inverted commas, it's at some point the plant is going to run into the forces of nature that are going to bring it down. So it's just a matter of time, and now that the time has come, and we're really on the verge of a terrifying catastrophe that is a result of our folly. But this folly is embedded in the capitalist system.
Okay, I wanted, we're on the brink here talking about the nature of humankind as well as capitalism. You do say in the book that capitalism follows conventional rules. These are not absolute laws of nature, but this is the way how the system has grown up.
Well, it has some tendencies. You know, it has certain structures, and it's a very complex system And there's a lot of disagreement about it. You know, I have my views, and other people have their views. And of course, I think I'm right. You know, but I mean, it's not that it's a simple matter. Capitalism has a lot of tricks up its sleeve. It has a lot of ways of getting by. It enters the mind. It sort of creates human beings in its image. Obviously, it's a potential of human nature to be capitalist, so it wouldn't have existed. But by the same token, you must realize that humanity has been around for a lot longer than the capitalist system.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only been capitalism for about 500 or 600 years, depending how you count it. But there's been humanity for a whole lot longer, and even humanity that's been pretty destructive and pretty nasty. You know, mm-hmm. the Roman Empire, for instance, was a pretty awful thing to be part of. But it wasn't a capitalist enterprise because it didn't have this. One thing that capitalism does is it foregrounds money. Let's say the commodities have what Marx called the use value, which is their relationship to nature, but also their exchange value, which is their relationship to each other. And what capitalism does is it takes that second feature, the exchange value, and abstracts from it the money that comes out of it, and then that money becomes the active principle. So everything in capitalism is determined by the money that is made. And that's the rules of the game. But it's a unique, it's a new turn. It's something that really didn't exist in history before the modern era. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about the alternative, eco-socialism?
Sure.
What is eco-socialism? What are its major tenets, and how would it work?
Well, eco-socialism, first of all, is just a name, and it's a name that has to be given content, and it's nothing written in the rocks. It's something that we have to create. It doesn't really exist yet, although there are, you might call what I call prefigurative instances of it, but it is two parts to it, each of which has to be worked through very carefully. This the socialist part, which is simply a society that is not run on capitalist rules, and it's a society fundamentally in which human work and labor or productive or creative energy is not done in a class relationship where the vast numbers of people don't determine their own lives, but they only have power to work, which they sell for wages on a market. That's what capitalism is. And this is to me, it's a violation of human nature that capitalism separates our productive and creative mm-hmm. powers from the means of production, and that's how it changes the world and changes us. So the socialist part is where the power to work is freed, and that people freely associate and determine their own productive labor and mm-hmm. Their own way of making the world. In the Communist Manifesto, because it really has a lot to do with Marx. This Marx and Engels write that when this happens, this is a quote, we shall have an association in which the free development of each is the condition for the free development of all. And that, to me, is the essence of socialism. Other people can have their definition, but that's the definition that Marx gives, and that's my definition. Mm-hmm. Now, that's part of eco-socialism, and that's an old ideal, but it wasn't really given ecological content until very recently.
Mm-hmm.
And socialism had a certain flaw in it, in that it wasn't actually linked to an attempt to heal the world, to attempt to rebuild the world according to principles of what one might call ecological integrity. Now that gets into the question of what ecosystems are, but my book deals with that mm-hmm. in considerable detail. But although everything in my book and all the work I've done is, I think, just preliminary. I think my job in life is just to open up certain things and let other people, you know, move along with it. But the key thing with eco-socialism is twofold. One, it's freely associated labor, which is what I talked about earlier, but also with an ethic of eco-centric values. That is to say, mm-hmm. you value the integrity and inherent, you know, internal beauty and structure of nature as it has evolved. I mean, I think there is a lawful principle inherent in nature, which is that it has evolved life, and life has evolved consciousness, and all of that is our, you know, inheritance, mm-hmm. which we're squandering. But we don't have to squander it if we have freely associated labor, and if we apply that labor, which we would, if our labor is freely associated, people would spontaneously work to heal the planet. So the big difference between eco-socialism and conventional environmental practices is that we don't disdain taking, you know, proper care of the environment. We're all for, you know, renewable energy. We're all for controls on pollution and the like. But the key feature is the way we work, the way we live. So the key feature is ourselves. And I feel that if we're freed, and we're fulfilling our own destiny, but at the same time, we want to naturally heal nature because we're part of nature. And it's when we become estranged from nature that we become destructive and that we become lost and all kinds of paranoid and racist and, you know, violent structures appear. So this is the general principle of things. And, of course, it has to be worked out in great detail. And people are working on it.
We've wondered from time to time about what might trigger the revolution. We were thinking of events last week in Wisconsin.
That's
depriving labor of its bargaining power.
Right.
Is that the sort of thing that...
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's not the thing about it, and it's beautiful, but it's also challenging, sometimes daunting. There's no path that's prescribed. Is you make the path by walking on it. You know, things come up, and then you have to seize the day. Now, you know, and what's happening is labor was treated that way in Wisconsin because capital is now in the colossal throes of a intractable crisis.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crisis both of accumulation. Where the rate of accumulation of capital is slowing down for internal reasons, but also ecological degradation, and the chief feature there is in the area of energy, and capital, which has to keep growing and expanding, is constantly becoming more and more aggressive, as with nuclear power, you know, but also mm-hmm. with the horrors of the underwater, you know, drilling accidents,
yes.
or
mm-hmm.
what's going on, the fracking, or looking for the natural gas by destroying the Marcellus Shale, or mountaintop removals to get coal, or tearing up Alberta
mm-hmm.
to get the oil.
The oil shales.
Shale oil, or destroying Ecuador by Chevron, or destroying Nigeria by Shell. You know, these are the struggles that are going on, and people are fighting up and rising against it. Now,
right.
It happens in different ways in different places. It's not written in the rocks. There's a constant emergence of new possibilities of association, which you see. I mean, it's a moment of freedom. And it's an incredible time to live because you're seeing all these developments. I think this is all part of the transformation. And whether it succeeds or not is an open question. There's nothing
right.
inevitable about it. But you know what's happened in Egypt and the Arab world.
Right.
We have these tyrannies, but then there's internal development within the tyrannies, and a lot of this has to also do with gender, and you have women taking
right.
new roles, and then the world suddenly appears in a different light. The great thing about it is, you know, you might not win. I don't know what winning means, except you know, getting rid of capitalism. But it's a thrilling time to be alive, although it's very frightening.
How do you see healthcare?
I'm sorry?
How do you see healthcare feeding into
God.
This? That seems like a huge. People are so burdened, and they're so tired of being burdened.
Oh my gosh! Yes. Well, you know, I was a doctor, and I stopped being a doctor for a number of reasons. A basic reason, I think, is that I'm just too restless and didn't want to be constricted in a professional life. But and I'm glad for that. But because I was, you know, I was good at it. I was a professor at a medical school. I was in charge of a training program. I definitely, you know, moved ahead in that world. But if I could imagine. If I could have foreseen, if somebody had told me back in 1961 when I graduated from medical school that there'd be time when medications would be advertised on, you know, the evening news and billboards would tell you to get this hospital treatment, and I would have laughed in their face. That's ridiculous. That's not what medicine is it? But it was, you know. And why? Because capitalism invaded it. And in the days when I entered the profession, physicians are mostly independent entrepreneurs. Not that that was a good thing. It could have a bad side to it. It was more like a feudal profession, but it became increasingly capitalized. And you know, which is to say, doctors became very high-paid, but nonetheless... workers, and you know, in these giant industries that were controlled by insurance companies, by pharmaceutical companies, by the hospital industry. It's a very complex subject. All of this is complicated. You have to study history of everything. But the health system has become this enormous burden. Of course, we know that other countries almost uniformly have more rational health systems than ours. But at the same time, the capitalist cancer, because capitalism is like a cancer, has afflicted other countries. You know, they're in Canada, England, every place is the health as a human right, health as something that society assumes responsibility for, is continually under threat by private interest, by greed, by, you know, commercialization and all the rest. So it's part of that struggle, although no question that the struggle is most acute in our country. But I was very involved in struggles to socialize medicine in all the years that I was active in the health trades. And I mean, even today, when the so-called single-payer option is considered anathema, is considered some kind of a curse word. That's astounding, because that's actually very tepid. I mean, health should be. Why shouldn't the society? You know, why shouldn't we give people a good life? You know, well, because the answer is because the ruling class demands some maximum profits. Demands that everything is turned into a commodity, and healthcare is turned into a commodity as against being a right that people have simply by virtue of being alive and part of a living, vital human community.
Seeing what we're seeing, you know, sort of the dangerousness of some of the thing, of nuclear power, for example, and the oppression of the healthcare system and the attempts to not allow labor to get paid for their labor. Why haven't people risen up?
Well, that's another
wondering
huge question. What is it that keeps people down?
Yeah.
And why? And of course, it would be nice if we were all fully free internally to fight injustice, but we're also, you know, internally crippled in many ways, and again, that's again part of the system of the reproduction of this kind of order of things. How it, for instance, corrupts the educational process, or how it traps people in these circuits that you could roughly call consumerism. There are very definite mechanisms which the system puts into place that play upon our fears, that play upon our isolation, from each other, our estrangement from society, and it's extremely potent. I mean, just take the burden and curse of indebtedness, and how the average person is sucked into ever widening spheres of indebtedness. And of course, this is a big generalization, but it's also generalization that happens to be true. And you know, how many applications for credit cards have you received in the mail this week?
Exactly.
And not a day goes by when you don't receive something. These people are constantly trying to hook you into their system, and as you become indebted, they have you in their grip. And this increases your fears, increases your loneliness, and makes people turn against each other. And there's no doubt that human beings are very, very vulnerable to all kinds of delusions and internal weaknesses, and that colonize those vulnerabilities and exploit them to the hilt.
You've said in the book, however, that a legitimate function for people is to be to raise hell, to be mad. You don't necessarily have to have a solution in mind. What do you recommend?
You're fully alive, then, if you do that.
I'm sorry?
You're fulfilling yourself as a vital, living creature by doing that.
So you do this primarily through your awareness, knowledge, understanding, and being willing to speak out on the issues.
Well, yes, but also I think one fundamental rule is that I am just living through this wonderful time, and I have a grandson, and watching him develop, week by week. When we come into the universe, into the world, and become conscious, we're really connected to everything. We don't have an individual self. We're part of it all. And as we grow and mature, we individuate ourselves. The question is then open: does the individual self become an ego, which is kind of set off from everybody else, and pride and greed? All the seven deadly sins. A lot of these things are played out in the Bible and in traditional religions, which are very, very helpful in understanding them. But basically, we're born with a universal capacity, and then we become individuated and separated from each other. And then what we have to do is regain the connections. And you can't get anywhere if you're acting as a separate individual.
Right.
In one of the questions you sent, I remember reading it, that was the point that really stood out. It's, as an individual, you can clean up your yard, and you can recycle, and you can, do an occasional good thing, but it all depends on how much you're reaching outside of yourself. And so a lot of what we call political is more about a spiritual development than anything else, in the sense that you have to break through the barriers that constrain yourself as an isolated ego and begin to reach towards a universal. So, you can see the obstacles in the path of various forms of chauvinism or racism and, that kind of thing, or ethnocentricities. Clearly, as a species, we're highly vulnerable for that, but just as clearly as a species, we also have the capacity of transcending it.
Thank you. We need to end on that note, and I appreciate the transcendental note at the close.
Yeah.
Joel Covell is author of The Enemy of Nature, The End of Capitalism or The End of the World. It's published by Zed Books. You can also learn a good deal more about Joel at his website, which also includes a link to the Eco-Socialist Manifesto.
Except that they changed the website around. I have a little problem with the website. It was originally joelcovell.org, and if you go to joelcovell.org, you'll see that they got me, and it's a bunch of crummy ads. It's very embarrassing. But joelcovell.net will do it.
Okay. Great.
We've got those websites. We'll post them. Thank you very much for being with us tonight, Joel.
All right.
Yeah,
pleasure
thank
talking
you.
To you.
Thank
okay,
you.
Bye. Bye.
Mountain. I don't love the sea. I don't love Jesus. He never done a thing for me. I ain't pretty like my sister. small like my dad, but good like my mama. Now that may not be love, but it is all right.
And with us in the studio now is Cheetah Chudy. He is the puppet master who will be running the workshops that begin this Friday. The puppet making workshops are, as you probably heard, part of the Endangered Species Fair, which will, for the first time this year, have a procession of the species. Giant puppets, small puppets, costumes, wings, feathers, and so forth. So the first workshop will be this Friday, 4:30 to 7:30 at the Grub Cooperative. That's 1525 Dayton Road. And welcome, Cheetah. Thanks for coming to talk about puppets.
Thank you for having me.
So can you tell us a little bit about what people can expect when they come to the workshop this Friday at the Grub Cooperative at 4:30? What's going to happen?
So again, we're looking to make puppets and other masks and props and objects centered around the Endangered Species Fair. And so we're looking to kind of pull together a people's parade in celebration of the natural world. Going to be designing, creating, building our own masks, puppets, and floats to help celebrate diversity in the natural world. And so basically with puppet building, it's a conversation between designing, envisioning what you want to make in terms of a puppet or a mask or a costume, and figuring out what construction we need to do. And for the most part, we're building things out of paper, cardboard, and other recycled material, and using wood glue and paint to kind of to make them adhere, to work together. And it's a really loose, malleable medium. You can build things out of cardboard and paper and undo your work and try again and make it work. And once we have a costume or a puppet that's suited to you, then it's practice and a performance and designing how your puppet or your costume moves, and then again modifying your design to make it work for you.
So can you maybe walk us through, maybe choose a puppet or an idea that you think people could work on? Or do you have several ideas of how puppets can be constructed? Are they?
Absolutely. There's several styles of construction you can do. You can make very small things that can be a handheld prop, but just a very small puppet you can make in just a few minutes, really. Or you can make larger backpack puppets, or the Kids and Creeks program will be designing and constructing a giant salmon, which several people will operate in conjunction, similar to the Chinese dragons or Chinese lion routines.
So they'll be inside of the big giant puppet.
Yeah, several people will work into conjunction to make the fish swim. It's a very simple design using just PVC piping and fabric. Likewise, as with the Peace and Justice project, we made many backpack puppets where you simply build a head and a set of hands and then stretch a piece of fabric. Three people can work together to run one puppet, or you can mount them on backpacks and build a giant puppet that you can wear all by yourself and fly the flag of your favorite animal.
Okay, so have you got an example of a puppet that you could talk to us about building?
Absolutely. Essentially, for the basic construction of our puppets, we use rod, string, and fabric to articulate cardboard mold. So for example, we'll take to build the head of our salmon, we'll take a single piece of cardboard, make several cuts in it, serrate it, and from a flat piece of cardboard you can kind of do an origami fold to stretch it into a 3D shape. We then take strips of newspaper and do paper mache over our cardboard bone structure and apply the paper mache with wood glue. And that enables us to make something that very much has the characteristics of wood itself. You can take very soft cardboard, very soft paper, and make it very rigid. You can cut it with a power tool or a handsaw. You can sand it. You can smooth it out. And if it's not working, you can cut it, make very radical changes, and be able to glue it back together without major repercussion. And our end product is then painted. We can also glue fabric onto the exterior to make it a furry creature as well. So it's a very much a malleable medium. And when you come to the workshop Friday or any subsequent Friday for the next 4 weeks, you can come with just a vision of what you want to build, and me and my friends will help you realize your vision.
Okay, I've got a little bit of concern hearing this detail of construction. I don't have a lot of time. I want to be a bear, and I want to walk behind the salmon and just give a fair warning that the bears are out there too. What could I do that would be not cheesy, but quick, fairly easy, not take a huge amount of time, but give me a really credible puppet to bear in the parade?
I feel masks are a great way to make a contribution, just to represent your animal. We'll have simple templates made up, and throughout the day and for the subsequent weeks, I'll be making up examples that people can feel free to come in, use, decorate something that's already in effect fabricated, and contribute in a really simple way and just make this a great show for our community. And very much the point of it is to bring together community members and create entertainment together for each other.
That means that people could just come to one workshop, or they could come to all four. If they wanted to do something simple, they could complete a mask or a head or something in one workshop?
Absolutely. Okay. Likewise, if you don't have a vision in particular but want to participate, we'll have jobs that can be done where we want to make simple salmon puppets so that kids associated with Kids in Creeks can come decorate a puppet that's already made, a really simple puppet, and be able to come and play and participate in the parade.
The involvement can be as simple as working on one that's already done, or as elaborate as coming back for 4 weeks and working on your puppet week after week after week.
Absolutely. And again, it's completely flexible. Anything you want to do, puppets, masks, props, costumes. I hope to get one or two bicycle floats as well into the mix.
Great.
I'd like to seize the opportunity to, just demonstrate again what we're going to be doing, and also make a call out so that if anybody has supplies that they can contribute,
absolutely, yes.
That would be great. So essentially, it's going to be built from cardboard, paper, and wood. Most of those materials I already have and will provide. Something to bring on a day-to-day basis if you hope to attend would be pliers or wire cutters, likewise knives or an X-Acto, a box cutter, what have you. If you have a multi-tool of some sort, like a Leatherman-type tool, that'd be great. Paint brushes. And then things that we're going to need in general are wood glue, hot glue guns, and the sticks to accompany them, masking tape, duct tape. Fabric is going to be a big one. If you have any scrap pieces of fabric, those would be gladly accepted. PVC pipe, which we use for larger backpack puppets and the rods as well. Likewise, the paint is going to be a key factor. If you have any old house paint or acrylic type paints that will stain fabric permanently, that would be greatly appreciated. And there's a little bit of string and glue to hold it all together. But it's amazing what people come up with. I've hosted similar workshops, and I just am amazed by what people can generate.
So people shouldn't go out and buy a lot of stuff. Just look around the house and use their imaginations, and it will all come together at really low cost and be a nice example of recycling.
And if people have things that they want to donate, they could bring them to the workshop on Friday afternoon. They don't even have to stay. If they don't want to come to the workshop, if they have things to donate, they could bring them to the workshop. And the workshop, again, is they start this coming Friday, 4:30 to 7:30 at the Grub Cooperative. from at 1525 Dayton Road. Other thoughts or ideas, Cheetah, that you want to leave people with?
Just look forward to seeing some folks come out and build some puppets and some objects that we can perform with.
And, oh, I wanted to ask one more question. What do you mean by props?
Props could be really simple things. You can make a giant flower to carry along. Again, the Endangered Species Fair is a far-reaching topic. Species loss is widespread and certainly crosses the barriers of plants, animals, bugs, and microorganisms. And
Fungi,
absolutely.
Okay,
yes.
Great. I do want to just pass along an idea we heard that people might be interested in. One, we talked to a couple of teachers today, and they really like the idea of having their classroom become an ecosystem. So they'd have the butterfly, the flower, the frog, and their group would go together as different parts of the ecosystem. They were talking about doing a sea ecosystem, so a jellyfish. Isn't that great?
Great.
I really think it's going to be fun. So thank you very much, Cheetah. Thanks for coming in. Cheetah Chudy is the puppet master for the puppet workshops coming up starting this Friday, 4:30 to 7:30 at the Grub Cooperative. These workshops are open and free. Anyone can come. We're hoping that families will come and build things together. We're hoping that businesses might have people that they would like to, that would just like to come and have fun. Maybe even on the clock. Wouldn't that be nice? So we're inviting everyone, free and open to the public. Thanks again, Cheetah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
.1 FM KZFR is proud to host StoryCorps in Chico and Oroville. Look for the StoryCorps mobile recording booth in downtown Oroville in the municipal parking lot A. Stop by and visit the booth. Listen for StoryCorps clips on 90.1 FM KZFR, Check out more information online at kcfr.org or at storycorps.org. Thanks to Tri-Counties Bank, Moortown Rancheria, Concal Maidu, Enlo Hospital, Kelly Mayer. Accommodations provided by Chapelle du L'Artiste in Paradise. Support provided by the Peace and Justice Center and Friends of the Arts. And thanks for listening to 90.1 FM KZFR.
In addition to letting you know about the pop-up workshops coming up this weekend, we want to tell you about Pathway to Peace. We will be participating in that this weekend. It's on Saturday morning. It's a walk for the next generation of peacemakers, and it will be held Saturday from 9 to noon, starting at Children's Park and wending its way to Martin Luther King Jr. Park. We'll have an Ecotopia table at the Dorothy Johnson Center on 16th Street, and we hope kids of all ages will stop by and say hello. We'd like to meet you.
We also want to tell you about some of the upcoming public affairs programming on KZFR. Unique programs locally produced with a global awareness. Tomorrow, Wednesday, March 16th, 1 o'clock, Diana Suzuki will do her One World Music program, and she'll be including an interview with Jesse Lyon from the Butte College Environmental Affairs Department.
And on Monday, March 21st at 6 p.m., Teen Talk International Issues will feature reporting on key events worldwide and an interview with Leslie Johnson of the Chico chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by American Qi Center for Health, offering acupuncture and Chinese herbs to treat chronic and acute conditions such as headaches, allergies, asthma, and more. Acupuncturist Bill Nickel offers clinics and consultations. You can call him at 342-2895. And we are supported by Alternative Energy Systems, a locally owned and operated partnership providing energy for life with sustainable energy. Their information is available on the web at www.solarenergyforlife.com. Alternative Energy Systems offers energy solutions for residential, commercial, and agricultural needs. They can be reached by calling 345-6980.
Coming up at 7 this evening is The Storyteller with your anthropological guide, Adrian Scott, bringing you stories, legends, and music from long ago and modern day cultures. Join Adrian for a trip around the world, exploring the hopes, fears, and dreams that are universal to all people. And at 7:30, It's All Mixed Up. I think it's Jim up tonight, bringing you 2.5 hours of rock and pop from the edges of mainstream and contemporary music, blurring the boundaries of most commercial radio. Stay tuned and enjoy a listening world that is all mixed up.
Thank you for listening to Ecotopia tonight. I'm Stephen Chudy.
And I'm Susan Chudy. You can contact us at ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you and have some feedback on things that you'd like to hear on the show. We're happy to respond to the things that you would like to know about. You can also visit our website, ecotopiakzfr.net, and you can follow us on Facebook. I've been pretty good in the last few weeks about putting up advance notice, not hugely advanced, but advance notice of our shows, and we will try to keep on that one. Thanks for listening.
Weave me the sunshine out of the falling rain. Weave me the hope.